Hello everybody and welcome to the Circle of Life for an App V5 package, from sequence to termination. My name is Tamim Karim and I've come all the way from the UK to speak to you, and I have to say it's going to be an understatement if I say I'm absolutely buzzing to be here in front of you guys here today. So I'm a Premier Field Engineer and I work for Microsoft, and my job basically entails me going around the UK and the rest of the world at times, talking to our customers about AppV and their wider desktop strategies. So before we kick into the formalities, I was thinking, you know, what can I share with these guys that would just give them a little more insight into about, you know, who I am and what I do? So then it hit me. So when I'm not an AppV guy out there in the field, I'm actually a rapper. So I see some faces out there like, is this guy for real? Is he taking a mic? So I knew I might get this type of reaction. So for that reason, I brought along some proof.
Yeah.
Belong to you, we return. Life's a test, but we live and we learn. And who knows what's around the corner? As fate flows, fluid like water, and like water, I adapt to the space that I find myself, trying to find myself. And I know what I'm supposed to do, cause the best part of me is influenced by you. So if I live life at the top of the stairs, trying to hear what's going on, it's cause I cessantly care. And I know that's not healthy, but I just wanna know that my family is healthy. If I fall to pieces, I can piece it back together. I find some real peace whenever we're together. So what am I supposed to say? I just hope and pray my family's okay. Like, what am I supposed to do?
There you go. That's the proof for you that I am actually a rapper, right? So from the hip-hop stage to the tech-ed stage, you know, it just flows perfectly, doesn't it? And this is actually my first time at TechEd, my first appearance at TechEd, either as an attendee or a speaker. So I'm, you know, really honoured and privileged to be here today. I couldn't unfortunately be here this time last year because I was in the process of getting married. So anyone who's familiar with kind of Asian-y, Bangladeshi-type weddings is that we like to do things big, right? So we had about 1,000 guests at our wedding. This is literally this time last year. We had to rent out the largest venue in the south of England, which was the Royal Ascot Racecourse. And it basically took up the whole of my last year, pretty much the first half anyway. And that was the reason why I couldn't be here. So I thought I'd share with you the reason.
It was her fault.
So there you go, that's just a teaser. If you're really interested, the full trailer's on YouTube as well, just search for my name. But I'm figuring you're probably more interested in AppV because that's what we all came here for, right? So let's park the weddings and the rapping and everything else and move on to the topic at hand, which is the circle of life for an AppV5 package. It sounds so romantic, doesn't it? The circle of life. Well, really and truly, when we have those discussions with our customers, we're less so talking about the circle of life and more so talking about the life cycle, right? The life cycle of our packages, and how we go through those phases and stages with that life cycle of the packages. And those phases and stages can vary, right? And it's a very fluid, organic life cycle. So what I mean by that is we don't tend to have to do things in a particular order. Different parts of this life cycle will be touched at different times, often more than once as well. And what I want to share with you today is a behind-the-scenes view into how AppV handles these phases and stages of the life cycle from the behind the scenes, under the hood type of perspective. So, I mentioned, you know, nothing has to be done in a particular order, but we do tend to start with a first stage, and its first stage tends to always be the same, and that's create. We go about creating our AppV5 package. Not babies. If you want to know about that, you need to be somewhere completely different. So, the package we're going to create today is actually called Virtual DJ, and it's pretty much what it says on a tin. It's a bit of software that we can use, DJs can use on their laptops as a piece of software. So let's go ahead and have a look at how we go about creating AppV packages in 5.0. So welcome to the sequencer. Now this is the location where we come to sequence and create our AppV 5.0 packages. I just want to share with you some of the best practices around this machine. So it's basically your golden state image, you know, your golden build, essentially. Minus potentially a lot of your core extenuous apps as well. So for example, if I show you my add and remove programs on this machine, it's very minimal. So we're talking about things like your redistributables, your .NET frameworks, for example. Maybe even Office will be in here as well. But it's a very much your core build of what you're intending to deliver to out in the actual production environment. A few other best practices. We tend to disable services which might have a negative impact on the sequencing process. So for example, there's some core Windows services we disable by default, including Windows Search, Windows Update, and also Windows Defender. And that's really because the monitoring on a sequencer is a very kind of I/O intensive operation, and we're very sensitive to unnecessary I/O being picked up. And we can, in fact, negatively impact both the size and performance of our package if we leave certain agents and services running. So that's one of the best practices. Another thing I just want to highlight to you as well is with 5.0, we no longer have to have a mount drive. So who in here has worked with APV 4.6 in any shape or form? Just show of hands. So that's just over half, I'd say. And who in here has worked with APV 5.0 in any shape or form? So slightly less. So we're talking maybe just less than half of the room. Okay, so with 4.6, those who've worked with it, you know we used to have a mount drive, which was a requirement on both the sequencer and the client we actually delivered our package to. And by default, that was Q, so you might have heard about the Q drive. And now this isn't required anymore when we're talking about 5.0, neither on the sequencer or on the client. So that's another great relief for our customers when moving forward with 5.0. So our sequence is all in best practice. Let's go ahead and install our application, and let's go and sequence it into an APV5 package. So I've got my sequencer installed on here, and I've also copied over the executable for my installer of the Virtual DJ application. So we'll kick off my sequencing wizard. And we get two options. In this case, we're going to create a new virtual application package. We're going to start from scratch. And then we get a further two options. We either get the option to create a new package, which is default, or we get to create a package using a package accelerator. So a package accelerator, very briefly, is just a dehydrated package that someone else has already created and made available in the community for you to leverage. So it's really just kind of making the workflow a bit more rapid. In this case, we're going to start from scratch, so we'll go with the default. At this point, we'll get any advisories about the state of our sequencer. So for example, if our sequencer had been previously sequenced on and not reverted back to a clean state, or, for example, if any processes are running that might adversely affect our sequencing. So, for example, if I open up a process now, we'll get warned that other applications are running that might have a negative impact. So, by the looks of things, we're good to go. So let's click Next. Then we get three options in terms of that type of application we want to sequence, whether it's a standard app, an add-in stroke plugin, or if the application's middleware. And basically what happens here is, depending on what you choose, we'll change the workflow on the left-hand side there, you'll notice, dependent on that type of app. If in doubt, just go with standard application. There's not much to lose by just doing that. Then we get the option to either select our installer, which means we'll start monitoring and automatically invoke the installer for you, or we can choose a custom installation, which will basically just start monitoring and then let you do whatever you want to do, basically. So we give our package a name, Virtual DJ. And then we specify the primary virtual application directory, otherwise known as the PVAD. And the PVAD is basically where your application is going to deliver its primary assets to. So in this case, I know this application installs to C, program files, Virtual DJ. So it is a case of understanding your application and knowing where then primary assets go to, so and understanding where your installer is going to put most of its files and folders. One thing to highlight as well, even files that get written outside of this location will still be picked up. So I'll see a question there. So the question is, can we just point to the MSI and for it to read from the package? And the answer is no. You have to either spin up the MSI yourself or understand from a kind of application discovery perspective where your application assets are going to go to. And just to reiterate, it's not vital that all files and folders go to this location, but it's best practice that where your primary assets go is correctly identified in the PVAD. Another question? So the question is, can you put an environmental variable? It's not supported to. In fact, you should just put a path to where it's going to install to on this particular machine. And what we'll actually do is variabilize a lot of that anyway for you in the actual package. So good question. So that's our PVAD. And what's going to happen next is we're going to spin up this monitoring environment that's going to monitor everything that happens on this machine. So we're in this phase now where every single modification to files, registry, fonts, services will all be picked up. So let's go and run our installer up. And we'll just do a next here, accept the EULA. I'm going to go for a custom install. So you can see there my PVAD is the primary virtual application directory there. And I'm just going to also divert this location off to my PVAD as well. And I'll explain why shortly. Cool. So we're ready to install. So let's go next. And then as tempting as it is, I'm going to resist installing the ask toolbar for my search provider. And off we go. So as I mentioned, every single file, every reg key, every service, every font that gets laid down at this point in time is getting picked up and monitored by our sequencing process. We get the option to launch the virtual DJ application now, but I'm actually going to hold back, and you'll understand why as we walk through the phases. Let's go to finish. You'll notice we carry on monitoring, so we have the opportunity to do anything else we want to with the package. You know, if we want to, you know, crack open regedit and change something, if we want to change an INI file or do anything in a manual perspective, or even run hotfixes or updates, we could also do that from here as well. In this case, I'm happy, so I'm just going to tick on finished and click next. And what we'll do is gather all of those changes. So the reason I didn't run Virtual DJ when it asked me or gave me the opportunity to was I actually get the opportunity to do this within the sequencer. And this is the phase to run the program to manage the first run tasks. And what it basically means is getting our application to a static state, a state that we want all of our users to receive this application in. So it's really simple. It's a case of right-clicking and launching the application and configuring it, doing whatever we need to do to get our application to a state we want our users to receive it in. So whether that's licensing, whether that's accepting EULAs, update preferences, or any other type of configuration that you want to be the standard, you can configure that at this phase here. So here's my virtual DJ application. So when you're happy with the configuration and that your application is in a static state, you can just click next. And again, what we'll do is gather all of those changes and record those into the package. So here we get a warning, and it's telling us that files have been excluded from the package. So even though I told you that we monitor the whole machine, by default, we also exclude certain locations from the package, locations such as your recycle bin and temporary internet files and folders, you know, places that you typically wouldn't want to roam with your package. So what you can do is review this list and just double check that there's nothing that looks integral to your package picked up as an exclusion. If there is, you can go ahead and unexclude the exclusion and resequence. Another key one tends to be app data local. From my experience out in the field, I've seen a lot of in-house written apps do tend to, out of bad practice, it must be said, write to this location, and we exclude this location by default. So if you find a lot of DLLs or configuration files popping up in app data local, it might be something you want to go and visit and change the behavior of. So we can stop now, but there's still a lot more to see, so I'm going to choose Customize. And then we get the option to optimize our package. So this is something that some customers get a bit anxious about because it's around the concept of streaming. And you know, customers feel like, all right, now I have to make a commitment in terms of how my package is going to stream. But this is really just to say, if this package is ever in a scenario whereby it has to stream, you know, albeit you can negate it on your RDS environment or your VDI environment, pre-caching and shared content store mode and other features that we have. But if we are ever in the scenario where we want to stream the package dynamically, how do we do it? Yeah? So we've got three key options here in terms of how we can optimize our package. The first one is just to tick this box and say, force the application to be fully downloaded. And what that means is, upon the click of the icon from the user, if the application isn't in cash, we're going to require all of the assets to come down fully 100% into cash before the user can use and launch that application, so before they even get their splash screen. The other option is to right-click and launch your application. And what we'll do in this scenario is actually draw a line in the sand, and we'll say, right, everything that was touched during the launch of this application is what we call feature block one. And feature block one is basically everything that will be required at point of launch. So when they launch the icon, we'll require that chunk to come down into cache, and then the rest can come down in the background. And what we find is feature block one is always, well, normally, a very small percentage of our overall package, so it improves that experience. The other option is just to click next and ignore this whole scenario. And what that does is actually does something called fault streaming. So you'll get a warning saying this package is going to be fault streamed. And what that means is we're going to stream down the bare minimum required as and when required upon launch of the application. And this, in fact, is the best practice as recommended by Microsoft in terms of the performance, both from a launch perspective and a use case perspective as well. So go ahead and use fault streaming unless you've got any reason not to. On this page, we get the option to restrict our package to certain OSs. It's not to make it compatible with OSs or anything like that. It's really just to put a hard-coded reference inside an XML that says this package can only be deployed to these operating systems. And again, unless you've got a real reason to, my belief is that your delivery mechanisms will dictate where your packages go to. So it's really maybe over the top to specify hard-coded references in here that might catch you out when further new OSs come out as well. So again, it's something you can use if you've got a reason to. So we can continue on, or we can save the package now. We're going to continue on and go to the package editor. So the package editor is basically the nerve center of our package, and it contains all the information about what we've captured. So we can see the properties of our application, our name, our GUID of our package, and this is unique. And we also get a unique version GUID propagated every time we save the package. We can look at the deployments and in terms of the OSs we've restricted it to, if any. We can look at the change history. So if we've had lineage of this package in terms of previous versions, we can review that lineage inside this tab here. Then we can look at the virtual registry. So we can look at the registry keys that were captured as part of this monitoring phase for this package. So here you can see the HKey local machine software keys that were picked up. So remember these, actually, because we're going to come back to these a few more times, both on the sequencer and on the client. So it's worth remembering. We can also review the files in our package. And you'll notice the primary assets, i.e. the PVAD, is essentially the root. So everything in the root is stuff that went to C program files, virtual DJ in this case. So we can see things in here like PDF documents that are in there, help guides, and we can see the executables themselves. Also in the root, we have this other folder called VFS, which stands for Virtual File System. And this contains stuff that into the package, but outside of the PVAD location. So things that went into System 32, the Windows folder, etc. On a virtual services tab, we can review any services that were created as part of this package installation. And in this case, there wasn't any. On the advanced tab, we've got advanced settings around COM isolation. And isolation is something I'm going to talk to you about later on in a bit more detail, but we can actually break that isolation if we want to for whatever reason. And then finally, on this tab, we can amend the shortcuts and the FTAs for each entry point into our application. So you'll see, for example, this application here hasn't got any FTAs, but it does have a certain shortcut associated with it. We can add and edit these as well if we want to. Brilliant, so we've got our package. So the only thing really left to do here is save it. So let's go to Save As, chuck this on the desktop, and we'll put it in a subfolder, and save. So here we see the assets of our application. This is what we packaged. So I want to highlight to you the different files in here and what they really mean to you as a sequencer and as someone who's going to deliver this package out to your environment. So the primary file you need to know about in this whole structure here is pretty much the .atv. You can see it's the largest file by far out of everything that's been spat out by the sequencer, and it contains your primary assets for your application. It contains everything you need to get it published, essentially. So this .app is actually built up on top of the Apex file format, which is the same format you get when you download Windows 8 store applications from in terms of the modern UI. So we can actually rename this, because essentially a .appv is a container file. And we can browse this. And this is something to kind of drive home with appv and those coming from a 4.6 background. We really appreciate we've now much more aligned ourselves to Windows standards. So we can actually see what's inside of our package. So we can see the registry.dat file, which is a hive file. And I can actually copy this out and mount it if I want to view the contents. So if I open up regedit, call this virtual DJ. And we can go in here and see them same keys that I highlighted to you in the package editor. On top of that, we can also see the root of our folder, i.e. the PVAD, and the files and folders associated there. So we can see the XCs and our PDF documents in there, all in a kind of native format. And we can see the VFS structure as well. Also in the root of our zip, we have these XML files. So you might be thinking, what are those XML files about? Well, these XML files are basically to aid the delivery of my package, and they're all core metadata files. So I'll just highlight some of the key ones to you. We have our Apex block map, which is basically essentially that. It's a checksum or a block map of everything that's inside our package, and it maintains the integrity of our package. And this is why we don't support writing into this appv format outside of the sequencing process. It's a read-only file. We also have our Apex manifest. And this file is essentially, it's probably the best way to describe it. It's like the passport of your application. It's the DNA of your application. It's got the things like the GUID, the name, all the integrations that make up your application, any FTAs, any shortcuts that are in there. They'll all be found inside the manifest. And the manifest is basically the default delivery of your application. So when you deliver your application, however the manifest says your application integrates, that's what gets delivered by default. We then have our system metadata, which is basically just a list of files that make up your package. We have our package history XML, which basically traces the lineage in terms of who's touched your .appv. It's good for the blame game if you want to find out why your package suddenly isn't working. You can look in here and see who's last sequenced your package, who's last touched it in terms of what machine, where, when, why, and how, etc. And then we have our streammap.xml. So this goes back to the optimization that I talked to you about shortly earlier, where we talk about either doing a feature block definition, a full block that needs to be downloaded, or fault streaming. The thing to kind of highlight to you here is even though we've done fault streaming, there's still something called feature block zero, also known as the primary feature block or the publishing feature block. And what the publishing feature block is basically the assets that have to be physically on the machine prior to anything happening. So for even my user to be able to launch the application, they need to have the publishing feature block available to them. So in here you can see the icons, for example, are needed, so that makes sense. You know, we need to have an icon for a user to launch our application. We can see that parts of the XCs are needed as well for all three of the XCs in my application, and that tends to be the headers of the XC, just those particular blocks. Each block in appv is 64 KB in size, so very granular. So great, so that's my .appv. You will also notice in the root of where I saved my package out to, we have another number of files as well. We have the report.xml, which is carried over from 4.x days, which is basically a diagnostic file, and it contains information about things like any warnings or errors experienced during sequencing, and also a good list of all the files that were excluded during the sequencing process. So if your package wasn't working, you could refer back to this to see if there's anything in there that looks important to you. We also have an MSI, the subject of a lot of misconception. The thing to get clear here is the MSI, all it is a wrapper for some command lines, some PowerShell commands that will add your package in a standalone format. So it's not an installer in its own right. It still depends on having the .appv present. But what it will do is actually run the commands, which I'm going to share with you very shortly, about how we can add this package into a standalone machine. And then finally, we have these two XML documents. And I'm going to talk about these in a bit more detail later. But what they are, they're for post-sequencing adaptation of your package. So rather than have you having to resequence your package, these XMLs can change the way your application behaves or looks or feels or integrates on a kind of machine or user basis. So the deployment config is computer-based changes, and the user config is user-based changes. Again, I'm going to talk about this in a bit more detail later on. So we've created our package. The next phase tends to be delivery. Yeah. So we deliver that package out to our end users and let them consume the assets of our package. So let's go over to the client and have a look at how that delivery takes place. So I'm going to jump onto AppV client now. And the AppV client is made of a number of processes. It has a back-end service, which I'll share with you here. And we'll find it here. So we have a service that runs. We also have an optional GUI, which you can download as either MSI or a .appv itself if you want to deliver your AppV GUI as an AppV package as well. But from SP2 onwards, this is an optional extra. We don't ship it by default. And pretty much what I want to kind of get home and kind of really make clear today is everything with AppV on the client is PowerShell driven. And it's PowerShell driven regardless of whether we use Config Manager or whether we use AppV Server. The stuff that happens under the hood is pretty much always the same. So everything I'm going to show you today, you can take and really apply it to whatever type of environment you've got, because they all do the same thing under the hood, and that's PowerShell. So let's look at delivering that virtual DJ application to this client machine. So we see we haven't got it installed at the moment, neither on a start menu or desktop. So the first command we're going to run is an add-appv client package. And we specify the location of our package itself, the .appv. So this can be in an SMB location, it can be in a HTTP or HTTPS location as well. So they're the two types of protocols we support in terms of delivering that package. So what does this command do? Let's hit return and see. So what this actually does is integrates the cache. So it integrates the cache for the machine. So we can see our package is now registered with the machine. It's our version 1. This is the location we're going to stream it from. In AppV world, this will be a DFS share somewhere, or file share somewhere, or IIS server somewhere. In Config Manager, this will be either your distribution point or your local Config Manager cache, depending on how you choose to deliver. But it's all the same, right? It's either SMB or HTTP / HTTPS. You'll notice at the moment, however, this isn't published to either my user or globally to my computer either. So the add, all it does behind the scenes is propagates the cache. And the cache by default lives in program data, appv. And in here, we'll see the GUIDs. And GUIDs are something you're going to get very used to if you work with appv5, because that's how we store the uniqueness of our package. So you'll see in here we have our package GUID, under which we have our version GUID. And in here, you should see something that looks quite familiar to you. It's pretty much a reflection of the .appv that I unzipped for you over on the sequencer, right? You can see our registry.dat.hi file. We can see some of those XMLs that are highlighted to you. We can see the root of our package, the executables, and those PDFs as well. Does anyone notice anything different about what I'm showing you now? You might notice you see these X symbols by some of these files. Can you see them? So what these represent are sparse files. And if we go back to the PowerShell, you'll actually see the percent loaded in cache at the moment is only 2%. And that 2% represents what? The publishing feature block, the bare minimum that has to be on our machine at a time of publish. And the rest is yet to be streamed to this machine. So if we look at some of these sparse files, for example, this executable here, and go to the properties, you'll see that although it's 3.15 MB in size, on disk at the moment, it barely occupies half a meg. And that's because we haven't yet received the stream of this application to the client. The smallest one of these files can be is 4 KB in size. So you'll see here, this PDF document hasn't been streamed at all. So the very smallest it can occupy on disk is 4 KB in size. And all it means is basically we're a sparse file and we're waiting to take on that stream into cache. So we've added our package. What's the next thing that's going to happen? The next thing that's going to happen is a publish. And again, that publish is going to be targeted via either config manager or at the server in your environment. But under the hood, it's exactly the same thing in terms of PowerShell. We're going to run a publish dash at the client package. And in this case, I'm just going to use the name of my package. So the add and then the publish. And what the publish does is integrates it for either the user or the computer. So in this case, it's going to integrate it for the user. And you'll see when I return that, I now get a publish to user is true. It's still only 2% in cache, but now you'll notice I get my icon on my desktop. So my user essentially now has access to this application. So we can go ahead and launch it. And what you'll notice there very briefly in the right-hand corner was the stream taking place. And what's going to happen now in the background is while the application is running, if we go to my client GUI, we'll see that bar slowly start to creep across until my package is 100% in cache. So there's my virtual DJ application delivered, and while I'm using it in the background, it's coming 100% into cache. Even once I close it, we'll find, because I've previously used it, it will continue on until it's 100% there. If we go back to my program data location in cache, program data at V, GUID, and there we are. You'll see those X symbols have now disappeared. So that same executable we picked on earlier is now the same size on disk as it was as a file itself. As is that PDF document that we talked about that was only 4 KB on disk, is now the full size on disk. Great. So our package is now available to our user. It's streamed down to the machine. It's 100% in cache. I just want to show you about the isolation model that takes place with AppV, because AppV is two things, and one is a delivery mechanism, and one is an isolation mechanism that isolates apps from others. And it's the isolation mechanism that would allow us to have, you know, if we wanted to, 10 versions of this same package on the same machine without any conflict. And the way we can achieve that is by using the isolation itself. So I'm going to run a few commands. I'm going to actually store into the variable $package the output of get-appv client package virtual DJ. And the reason I'm going to do this is just to make my next command a bit easier. So you'll see $package now contains my package assets. And I'm going to run a command called start-appvvirtualprocess-appvclientobject, the name of what I want to, the package I want to inject in, and then the name of the process that I want to inject into that package. And what I'm really intending to do here is give you a view of how things look from the perspective of the application opposed to the local view. So let's take a look at the local registry, for example. Ooh. So where would the registry exist for this application if it was traditionally installed via MSI? We'd find it under HKey local machine, software, virtual DJ. But of course, with AppV, we have that isolation, which means we don't see it in that location. So let's take a look at the registry from a virtual perspective. We'll pan that to the right. So on the left-hand side, we have our virtual our local registry, and on the right-hand side, we have our virtual. If we open up the registry from that same location, you'll see we have that virtual DJ set of keys that I talked about back on the sequencer. So the application thinks it has one view of the world, but really and truly, we know from a local machine point of view, we have a different view of the world. So where do those registry keys exist physically? Because the app's seeing it in a certain location, but where does it exist physically? Well, we know that hive file exists in the .appv itself, and we can see that hive file inside the cache. But in terms of physically on registry, we're actually stored natively as well, just in a slightly abstracted location under Microsoft, AppV, Client Packages. And if we drill down, we'll see those same registry keys existing locally on the machine. So in local reg, they're there, but they're just in an abstracted location. The AppV filter driver makes it appear so to the application that they're in the location that the application expects. That's the magic of AppV with isolation. Great. So we delivered our package out to our users, right? And that delivery can take many shapes and forms. You know, for some customers, there's a UAT process that takes place where they'll test their application with a subset of users. Other customers might be a bit more confident and gung-ho and go straight out to production. But that delivery takes those phases through. And what we see as well is that that delivery can be done by many different mechanisms. So we can do it via Config Manager, we can do it via the AppV server, but really and truly, what happens under the hood is exactly the same. So we see that we do an add and a publish as a default delivery. So an add and a publish is the same every single time, regardless of whether we use the Config Manager delivery or whether we use the AppV server delivery. So after delivery, what tends to happen? What tends to happen after delivery is that users want to inflict change. You know, we deliver this application to a user, and they want to make it their own. You know, they want to put their stamp on their application. And that change becomes very identifiable with the user. Yeah? And this presents unique challenges and unique opportunities as well in terms of how we manage that change. So let's take a look back on the AppV client and take a look at how we manage change in AppV. So I'm going to run a get-appvclientpackage-virtual-dj, and this is a command you can run regardless of delivery mechanism to see what packages are available to you as a user on the machine. So we have our version 1 package that we talked about and we've been using up until now. It's published to my user and it's 100% in cache and available to this machine. So let's talk about how changes are influenced on this package. So let's open it up as an end user. And let's make a change to this application. So let's configure something about it. Let's go here, we'll go to options, and let's change auto gain here to be disabled, for example. Yeah? So it's just a simple configuration change that I've made to this application. For me as a user, I prefer for that option to be disabled, right? Of course, AppV will retain those changes and keep those changes for my user. So when they go back in again, we should find it still disabled, auto gain. So where's that change been stored? Well, this application writes its changes to registry. So let's open up registry. And obviously, because it's a user-based change, we're more interested in HKEY current user. Software virtual DJ, which isn't there, right? Because we've got that isolation that we talked about. So from the perspective of the application, it wrote it to that location, but from an AppV perspective and a physical OS perspective, it's not there, yeah? Where it is in a very similar location to what we talked about earlier. It's under Microsoft AppV client packages. And in here, we see the familiar GUID that we're getting used to slowly. And under the user location, we see the user SID, so stored under the user context, virtual DJ. There it is. So there are the changes that are attributed to this user using this package on this machine. And in here, we should be able to find there is auto gain there. It's been set to 0, i.e. it's been disabled for this user. So with AppV, we also have the option not only to manage the application directly from here. So as a support desk engineer, for example, I could support the application directly in registry from here. We also have the option to repair it. And repair can be done both from the GUI itself by hitting this button here called repair, or we can do it from PowerShell using a repair-appvclient package and the name of our package or the reference to our package. And what that basically does is clears down the state change for our package. So if we refresh here, we'll see that now that has been cleared out, and my user has returned to a default state. So when we open up our package, we should find that auto gain has now returned to its default setting. Question? So the question's about roaming of that user state. And this is a very key question, and it's something that's very vital to the user experience. And with UEV, we've got a great solution with AppV. and use things like UEV and other profile management solutions, we can roam those settings with our users across different environments. In fact, I've got a customer who's doing this, and they've got it working to a degree where, you know, no matter whether their user logs onto a VDI environment today with an AppV application and then logs onto their full-fat desktop tomorrow with a standard installation of that same application, UEV will make sure that those changes will roam seamlessly in a very lightweight manner between those locations. So in answer to your question in terms of can we roam those, definitely, and it's something we recommend for our customers. Question? So the question's about group policy preferences and influencing registry changes. So group policy preferences would only see the registry keys of the local OS. It wouldn't be able to see inside the bubble. However, in terms of managed policies, so when you're talking about group policies themselves, AppV does respect and look at policies for that user. So if we're talking about things like Office, for example, even if it's virtualized, we'll still support and recognize those group policies. So the question is, how do we go about changing things, for example, registry inside the package, inside the virtual environment? And the answer is, we could do that via scripting. So it's something I'm going to share with you very shortly. We could look to script those packages and on launch, for example, change the registry key inside the package. And we can also amend the user part of the registry as long as we know the location, the different location we're going to. So even in that instance, group policy preferences, if you targeted it at the sub-location, the abstracted location of the package, it would still be beneficial in that scenario. Cool. So the repair is a really cool option because it allows us to get back to a golden state. And what we find sometimes with that change that the users make, although it's innocent most of the time, is that users can sometimes mess up the view of their application and then they phone you telling you it's broken. A quick repair will get it back to a golden state. Brilliant. So that change and roaming that change and letting your user have their own identity of your application is key to the user experience proposition. And as mentioned, things like UEV and other profile management solutions can really help you achieve that in a really great fashion. So change is great. We allow our users to change our applications. What about when we as admins, we as the people delivering the applications, want to change and adapt the delivery for our users, right? You know, we've got one app. We don't want to have to sequence it 10 times for 10 different scenarios. We want it to have a bit of adaptability. And that's where adaptation comes into play. How do we make our application adapt and blend into a new environment, a new scenario? Let's take a look back on the AppV client. So I'm going to run a get-appv client package virtual DJ just to show you what we've got on here at the moment. It's the same package, package version 1, published to my user, and 100% in cache, yeah? Now imagine we want to adapt this package for a new scenario. So imagine virtual DJ, this package, is going to be used tonight at the attendee party at the Minute Maid Stadium. And we want to adapt this package to behave slightly differently or look or feel slightly different for the scenario of tonight's attendee party. So what can we do? We can leverage those config XMLs that we talked about back on the sequencer. So we have these config XMLs which form our delivery of our application. And what I've done is actually copied one of these user config XMLs. So I'll show you the original. And the original was basically a reflection of the manifest. Remember that XML file inside the .appv that doesn't change? It's the default delivery of my application. Well, the user manifest is pretty much a reflection of that, but it's outside of the .appv, hence we can change it and use it to our advantage. So not only can we change things like, you know, the FTAs and shortcuts of our application, at the very bottom, we can also leverage scripting to change things about my package. So what I've done is I've actually copied this XML and created a new one called adapt. And I just want to make this application feel and act more for the scenario of the attendee party tonight. So the first thing I want to do is change the shortcut name. You know, I don't want to use virtual DJ home free because it sounds like we've been a bit of a cheapskate and got some free software. I'm going to change it to be something more suited to the occasion. On top of that as well, I want to also map a network drive. So every time I use a launch of this application, I want it to map a network drive to their music. So they've got their music easily and freely at hand. And then when they close the application, I want to demap that drive. So pretty simple stuff, but something that I don't want to have to resequence my package for. So what I've done is copied my user config XML, and I've just changed what I want to change. So I've changed my LNK file name to be TechEd NA Virtual DJ. And at the very bottom here, I've got some very basic scripting taking place. So I'm at start of the virtual environment, I'm going to map a network drive to my music for this particular user that's logged on using the environment variable. And at termination of the virtual environment, I'm going to actually delete that network drive as well. So that's all well and good. You know, I've got an XML document. How do we go about actually applying that to my package? So both Config Manager and the AppV server respect and understand what these XMLs mean to you. And they both got their own way of using the XML document. But essentially, all they do under the hood is at publish time for the user config XML, At publish time, we're going to specify the additional switch of dynamic user configuration path. So this extra switch allows us to specify that XML itself. So as soon as we hit return on this, we'll find my shortcut name has changed and it's become customized to my liking. And when I launch the application, we should find that network drive gets mapped as well. So what's happened when I run that command in the back end, and this is again the same for Config Manager or AppV server, is under my user profile, under roaming, Microsoft AppV, client catalog, and we drill down into here, we can see my dynamic configuration XML has been basically copied to my user profile. So that customization that applies to me as a user has now been copied to my profile. If we open this up, we can actually see the name that's been changed in there, and we can also see the scripts that map my network drive. Okay, oh, so the switch was dash dynamic user configuration path. So we should find now my network drive has been mapped to my music, so now this application and the user using this machine has a more integrated experience. And when I close it very shortly afterwards, we should find that my network drive gets unmapped. And this is just a real kind of peek into the possibilities that you have with these XMLs. You know, you can configure anything, any of the integration points, and then on top of that, scripting allows you to be ultra dynamic and ultra customized with what you do because, you know, scripting is pretty much limitless in terms of the possibilities of what you can achieve with that. So we've really opened up the doors and given the power back to the people who deploy the applications to make sure their users have the best experience with their apps. Cool. So that's how we go about updating our package and making it more customized and more adapted to certain scenarios and helping it to blend in to certain environments. You know, I see some customers who do it, you know, for example, they have a one-time sequence package, and because it's going to a VDI environment, they just want it to behave slightly differently. Or if the user's off the network, they want it to behave slightly differently. And those, all those kind of out-the-box scenarios can normally be achieved via scripting or via using the settings inside the integrations of the XML documents. And remember, we've got two. One is for computer-based changes, and one is for user-specific changes. As mentioned, Config Manager respects the XML and imports it in, and also does the server. But there comes times where adaptation just isn't enough. You know, we need to fundamentally change our package in a fundamental way to reach a new set of users and update it, yeah? So let's take a look from the client perspective how updates are handled. So, we're still working with our version 1 package that we've been working with up until now. But what I want to do is update this package, and I want to update it. I basically want to change the look and feel of my package to be more suited to a tech-ed virtual DJ attendee party look. So I need to actually take my package back to the sequencer and change the fundamental assets. And again, as mentioned, the .app V isn't writable, so it's not something I can change dynamically. This is something I need to really go back to the sequencer and create a new version for. And there's a lot of benefits as well by using our version system as well, because this package, a new version of a package, gets respected in a different way compared to just manually editing a package using scripts, for example. So what I would do is I'd take my original package and I'd carry it all the way back to the sequencer, and then I would begin monitoring again, similar to how I did at the beginning of the session, and change the package, you know, change the files, run the updates, do whatever I need to do to update that package. When I come to save the package, our sequencer will increment with an underscore number, so underscore 2 in this case, all the files that come out. So it'll append the version number onto there. You can disable that as well. It's an option, but by default, it's enabled. But really and truly, the naming of these files doesn't matter, because the version GUI will be unique. And that's really what keeps the uniqueness and the lineage of our package going. So that's great. I've got my version 2 package. How do I now get this out into my environment? So with Config Manager 2012, we can use something called supersedence to update our package. And in AppV Server, we have native support for updates, and we'll recognize that this package has a connection to a previous version. But really and truly, as I've been saying so many times already, under the hood, it's the same thing. We do an add and a publish. So similar to how the initial package was delivered, we're going to do an add of our new underscore 2 package. And again, that's going to integrate the cache. So if we go to program data now, under the GUID of my package, I now have two GUIDs, one for my previous version and one for my new version. Another interesting thing you'll notice is my package is already 96% in cache, already. So why is that? The reason is we do differential updates. Because the original package is 100% in cache, and the new update is pretty much exactly the same as the previous version, we don't need to restream everything again from scratch. We recognize that 96% of the package assets already exist in cache for another version. Therefore, the only the 4% that's changed has to come down. Question? So the question was, how do we map names to GUIDs? How do we know what these GUIDs basically mean when I'm looking at a folder full of GUIDs? So you've got a few options. One of your options inherently is PowerShell. So a get-appv client package will show you the list of names of packages. You can use search criteria as well to, you know, or wildcards even, to search for a particular package name just to find out what package there is. There's also other tools. There's third-party tools out there that have been written that allow that have a GUI-based version of that same thing, basically, which is just PowerShells. Other customers I've seen have written their own GUI-based layers to the PowerShell as well. Yeah, so from PowerShell, you could run a get-appv client package, which would then list all of the package names. So similar how we've done it up here, we just done a get-appv client package, and I specified the word virtual DJ, and it gave me the name of my package and the GUIDs for it. Yeah, so very similar to that. So we've added our package in. Oh, question there. So the question is, does this package show up in add and remove programs? And the answer is no. The only time this would show up in add and remove programs is if we use the MSI to deliver these PowerShell commands. So by default, the answer is no. So we've added our package, and the next thing, of course, is what? Publish, right? Add, publish. They're the two commands we need to do to get our package out there. So we're going to run a publish, and this publish looks a bit more lengthy to the publish we looked at earlier. And it's not really that bad. The reason is I'm actually being a bit more specific about what I'm publishing now. So rather than just publishing and specifying virtual DJ, I'm actually specifying the package ID and the version ID GUIDs in here, because I've got more than one instance of virtual DJ, I can't be so lazy with my syntax. I have to be much more specific. And if you look inside Config Manager logs in terms of the PowerShell commands being run, it'll be much more similar to this command rather than using the name of the package. It's all more GUID-based references, purely because it'll be more accurate. On top of that, I've also specified my dynamic user configuration path, which we already talked about in the adapt part of the Circle of Life. So there you go. My package is now published, and it's published to my user. If I do a get dash apt-vkit package virtual DJ dash all, what this basically does is tells us what packages are available to me as a user and entirely in cache as well. So even packages that aren't available to me will show up using the dash all command. And the reason I'm going to show you this is you can see that now I published my version 2 package, version 1 has been automatically unpublished for my user. So the user will always run with the latest package that's available to them as a user. And version 2 is there and available to the user. So now when we launch my package, we should find it's now been updated with a new kind of TechEd NA type feel to it. There we go. Our update has now been delivered. So as mentioned, the update scenario is a very key part of the life cycle in a circle of life for an app view package. We've seen some customers that have packages that get updated very frequently, and they need to be managed in that life cycle, and also packages that are updated less so frequently, if not at all. But I think the key thing is that we understand and manage our package updates in a way that makes sense. And both Config Manager with supersedents and the AppView server respect the version GUIDs and the lineage to the parent GUID and understand how that takes place on the client. Cool. So we've updated our package, we've been through that life cycle, you know, we created the package, we then delivered it to our users, whether that's UAT and then production, we then had our users customizing our apps and we've looked at the state changes and we've roamed that with UEV, we then adapted our package for the end of year, the attendee party tonight, we then also updated the package to give it a whole new look and feel and updated the fundamental assets. These are all key parts of the circle of life or the life cycle of our AppView package. Another thing I just want to talk about next is the isolation. So we talked about that already where, you know, the registry is isolated, as is the file system, and that's a great benefit. You know, it allows us to do some really clever things with AppView. But there are times where we need to connect. We need to take two or more elements and connect them together in harmony to provide a meaningful application to our end users. Let me show you what I mean back on the client. So I'm going to do a get-appvclient package to see what I've got available to me. And I've actually got two packages available to me now as a user. So if I go to my client GUI, we'll see these two packages here. And what I've done is actually modularized and been more granular with the way I sequence my application. And I've delivered it in two halves. I've delivered the application itself, and I've delivered the dependency separately as a separate package. And the dependency is the skins folder, which contains the look and feel of my package. So you might be thinking, you know, why have you gone and done that? Well, a lot of customers find it's really useful is to take a more modular approach to sequencing so that these packages are now independently serviceable. We don't have to bloat every package if certain packages are present in more than one. And we can now manage the relationships of our package out there. However, there is a gotcha to this, because if I deliver my package in two separate parts and they're dependent on one another, we're opening up the doors for my package to fail. Because by default, the isolation mechanism's in place, and there's no reason for virtual DJ to see the other half of itself that's delivered as a separate package, so it fails. So how do we get around that? How do we connect our packages? Well, we connect them using something called connection groups. From a Config Manager perspective, there's another terminology of virtual environments, but it's exactly the same thing. The AppView client sees them as connection groups. And what connection groups are basically a descriptor of a relationship of virtual applications. And that descriptor is formed as part of XML. So if I open up my packages here, I'll show you what that XML looks like. It's a very simple formatted XML document which has the name of my connection group, it has the version ID of that connection group, and a unique identifying GUID for the connection group itself. So the connection group in its own right is an asset, right? And within the packages node, we can see a list of packages that exist inside of that connection group. So this XML, as a person working with AppV, you probably wouldn't come into much contact with it if you're using Config Manager or AppV Server, because it's done in a GUI-driven format from both the server perspective and the Config Manager perspective. You know, it's more of a kind of click and drag and drop type exercise from an administration point of view. But you can do this as an admin, as a tester, if you wanted to, in a standalone form, similar to how I have here. So how do we get this XML to us? So as mentioned, delivery mechanisms will create that XML for you. And under the hood, what they'll do is they'll run an add-appv client connection group and specify the location to that XML. Simple as that. So as mentioned, you would never have to actually create that XML unless you really want to for testing purposes. Now we can see that's been registered, similar to an add of a package, the add of a connection group. And then the final thing is similar to a publish of a package, we have to enable a connection group. So we run an enable-appv client connection group, virtual DJ-connection group, which is the name of my connection group, and I'm going to specify -global. And what that does is enable that package globally to everyone on this machine. So it's a machine-targeted operation taking place. You'll see that now that has been published to my machine, and I should now be able to go ahead and launch my virtual DJ package. There it is. And what you'll notice from the client perspective is now both my packages are in use, and on the app connection groups tab, you'll see my connection group is actually in use as well. As soon as I close my application, or shortly afterwards, we'll see the connection group then closes down in terms of the virtual environment running, and the same thing for my applications. So that's defining the relationship between dependencies. A key one that we see out there in the field, and I see time and time again with my customers, is Java. You know, customers want to look at not having to bundle Java into every single package, or they've got applications that are just really fussy about a very particular version of Java that they look to sequence it on a one-time basis and then manage relationships into it via connection groups. So it's a very powerful feature of AppV5. So that's cool. So connections help us with connection groups to leverage the relationships between virtual application to virtual application, two or more virtual applications. But what about the bigger picture? What about when we're talking about integration? You know, we've got these applications out there, they're AppV applications, and everything's great. You know, the ones that need to talk to each other, we're managing via connection groups. But what about integrating with the wider platform, the bigger picture that's there? Our applications sit as part of a much bigger picture on the actual OS itself. How do we manage that integration? Let's take a look back on the client. So imagine, you know, my users are used to working with this application in a particular way. And this is the thing, I guess, with AppV, and this is something I talk to my customers about on a very regular basis, is because you've delivered your application as an AppV application, it doesn't mean they should use it any differently. The user still expects to use that application in the same way they always did. You know, they're not fussed whether it's an MSI or AppV, they just want to use their application. And things shouldn't have to change for them, not in a negative way anyway. So imagine my DJs are used to logging onto this machine, and they're used to opening up Paint, a local process, and go into C program files virtual DJ. And they're used to go into C program files virtual DJ to edit the skins, you know, the look and feel of that application. They like to actually take a part in that process. But they can't now, because I've delivered it as an AppV application. There's no reason why MS Paint should be able to see C program files virtual DJ. How do I get around it? So integration is a key part of the AppV5 proposition. And there's integration that take place by default, such as FTAs, shortcuts, and numerous other new integrations, such as app paths with AppV5 that help that experience. But things like this won't be accounted for by default. Enter a key called run virtual, which is a registry key. And this registry key can be found under hkey local machine, software, Microsoft App V. And there it is. So this registry key allows us to identify local processes that we want to have a view into the virtual environment. And what AppV will do is basically listen for that local process spawning and give it that view of that virtual application that you've asked it to. So I'm going to import a registry key. Into that location. And I'll show you what it looks like. So you see I've got mspaint.exe as the key name. And in the default value, I've put in the version the package GUID underscore version GUID of what I want it to have a visibility of. The package I want this local process to have visibility of. Yeah? So now, when I open up Paint, if we go to my client, in fact, we should see straight away my package is in use. You know, I haven't opened up Virtual DJ, but because of that run virtual key, the package is now in use. I could now go to open, see program files, Virtual DJ, there it is. So I can drill down into my package assets. I could open up that skin. I don't know, let's change it. Let's put something in there. So let's just customize it as we might be used to as an end user. That'll do. Save that out. I'm just going to put this into a zip. So next time my user launches their application, you'll notice once Paint closes, the application virtual environment closes down with it as well. Next time I launch Virtual DJ, we should now get the option to specify my customized skin. So this shows how you can use a local process and give it visibility of something that's virtual. Question? So the question is about being wary about putting Office products into that integration point. I think you need to always exercise caution. It depends on what packages. So if you had too many packages, for example, in a connection group that was always hooking into WinWord.exe, for example, you might impact things like the launch time. But other than that, there's not a lot to be that cautious about. I think the main concern would be launch times and making sure that that's a seamless experience. But I think in any respect, it's always worth testing. It is a use case that I've seen it used for, though. So I've seen the use case where Run Virtual is used where we have a native installation of Office, but we want to virtualize the plugins, yeah? So when the Office launches, we pull in the virtualized plugins to give it visibility to the Office, which is a local process. Yeah. Question? It's a good question. Can an executable have access to more than one AppV package? The simple answer is no. And the reason for that is we can only use the default key. So in the registry, we go back. The default key only holds the value, right? But the way we can get around that is by using a connection group. So you'll notice here I've actually got two packages, right? They're part of that virtual environment. And that's because I've specified one of the packages in here. Because that one package is in a connection group, that then allows all of the other packages to have visibility as well. Yeah? So that's a way around it. The only other caveat as well to run virtual is the package has to be published globally. It can't be published to the user alone. Okay, so it's sad times. We're nearing the end of the circle of life for our AppV5 package. We've gone through all of those phases and stages, and the last stage that we end up reaching, and to be honest, it's a stage that a lot of customers never end up reaching with some of their applications, but really, really want to, is termination, right? And it's about terminating that application when it's no longer fit for purpose, and we need to now bench that application and get it out of our environment. So what I'm going to do is just bring you back a few steps on our client, just to show you how we can look to roll back that application. So we've got our applications here, so it's still here. We've got our connection group. We've also got our applications themselves available. So the first thing we're going to do is repair. And the reason I'm showing you a repair again, even though I've already shown you it once, is because notice here I'm repairing the connection group. I'm repairing the connection group because once an application is delivered as part of a connection group, we lose the ability to repair it individually. Can you see here? I haven't got the button here to repair these apps individually. However, I can repair it as a connection group. So I just wanted to highlight that to you. And by default, when we remove a package either by Config Manager or the App V Server, we do still leave the user customizations in place because you know you might re-deliver that package tomorrow, and of course you want your user will expect that it behaves in the same way. We can then disable that App V Client connection group, and then finally remove it as well. And what we'll find from the client perspective is when we remove it, we now no longer have that connection group. Our application should go back to a failed state. So we still have our packages, however, still there, and they're 100% in cache if we go to program data. We'll see our package assets there sitting pretty. We can then unpublish our package to remove the integrations for either the user or the computer. So we're going to lose our shortcuts, we're going to lose our FTAs, any app paths, any shell extensions. All those things will be lost for the user. And then last but not least, if we remove our package using the remove-app client package command, we will wipe out the cache so the application no longer has that footprint on your client machine. Question? So the question is, when we uninstall or remove the packages as shown, unpublish or remove, do we still keep the run virtual references? And yes, we do. They're unmanaged registry keys. So they're just simple registry keys, and they behave in the same way any other reg would, i.e. they get left in place. So it'd be really something for you to manage in your own way on top of that. So group policy preferences is a cool way probably to manage that. Rather than manually on the client. So that's the life cycle of our AppV package. We went through the create phase on the sequencer where we sequenced our package, and we delivered it, and we looked at the OS integration from the cache to the way it integrates into the registry and the isolation model. We talked about state change and how we can use user profile management solutions to manage that change. We looked at adapting our package for different environments using the config XML and the deployment config XML. We talked about updating our package and fundamentally changing the assets of our package. We then talked about connections and how we can create connections between more than one virtual application. We then talked about integration with Run Virtual and how we can have local processes having an insight into our virtual application. And then finally, that place where a lot of customers are trying to get to with some of their applications, we looked at termination and how clean it can be in terms of the footprint it leaves on your AppV client. So, I know we've had some questions along the way, which is the way I like to do things, but do feel free to step up to the microphones if you have additional questions, and I can field those now. So if you don't mind just stepping up to the mics that are in the gangways, and we can entertain those now. Yes?
I was a little confused on the Config Manager deployment and the connection groups. Are you saying that you cannot use the connection groups with Config Manager deployments?
So, so you most definitely can. Right, so Config Manager of 2012 SP1 has something called Virtual Environments, which is actually part of the GUI itself. And you can see that, and you can basically create very dynamic connection groups where you specify groups of apps that need to have visibility of one another. So the answer is yes, you can via Config Manager. Question on the left, I did see you step up earlier, so. So repeat the question. So the question about licensing is quite a broad one because it all depends on the application and how your applications are licensed. So I've seen some apps that literally have an XML license file that sits on the machine, or other applications have a server which they license with. So it all depends. But typically, those kind of interactions can be done via scripting. So for example, say there was a license file that sits physically on the machine, you could look to clear down that license file via scripting at remove time of that application. If it's a server-based operation, there might be other techniques you can use as well. So it depends on the app.
Yes. This is a real basic question, but for people like an application is a good candidate for virtualization or not?
So a great question there about the you know, what are good candidates for AppV. There are things that we can't virtualize, and they're very well documented. They include drivers, so system drivers, device drivers, boot time services, and COM Plus. So those three components tend to be things that we can't virtualize. It doesn't mean we can't virtualize the application, but it might mean we have to look to deliver that driver locally. Or maybe that COM Plus component of the application isn't really required. In those instances, we can still sequence the application. We used to have limits on things like sizes of the app and stuff like that, but we don't have that with 5 anymore. So, and also with SP2, we've introduced shell extension support. So, you know, like right-click shell extensions, we now support those. So there are a whole new host of applications that we do support sequencing as well. So drivers, COM Plus, and boot time services are the three things that we are out of the boundaries of AppV. Question?
Looking at your V1 to V2 example,
yeah.
If you've published V1 to a user,
yes.
And they've taken your icon that you published and manage and made a copy in startup or pinned it to their system tray or anything like that, how does that react when you move to V2?
So that's a really good question, and we don't track that change, because there's no way for us to restrict where you can write a file to. You know, you could write to a file share somewhere and still try and use that file. So there's nothing that the client will do to reclaim that shortcut you've created. I think the best thing we can do is, as admins, try and deploy it to where that user would normally have it, i.e. on the start menu, etc. But that would be a consideration to have. Another thing just to mention about that shortcut is actually version agnostic. So that shortcut doesn't contain the version path. So should you have updated to a newer version, that shortcut will still be applicable for that newer version. It will just point them to the new version. So it wouldn't be a dead link.
With 4.7, I know that there was a gigabyte limit, there was a 4 gigabyte limit on
yes.
The page that you have. Because some of the applications I have are really small, some of the applications I have are really big. So the really big applications, they tend to have local, but that doesn't mean I haven't tried to virtualize them. But when I moved to AppV, tried to virtualize an application like AutoCAD, for example, and it's well over the 4 gig. And what I've seen is that the application and the sequencer actually crashes every time, no matter what kind of environment I try. I try to build the sequencer too as well. Is there any tips you could give to me so that I could try to virtualize AutoCAD successfully?
Okay, so is this with 5.0? So it's supported in 5.0, and I've known it to be the AutoCAD to be able to be sequenced. And I haven't actually experienced that particular issue you're talking about. It might be to do with resources on that sequencing machine that's getting exhausted, and the sequencer runs out of scratch directory. Because as you're sequencing, it actually stores things in the scratch directory, which you can see in tools options in the sequencer. So it might be checking out that you've got enough space for that scratch directory to be populated along with all installation files. As I say, I've seen it sequenced before, and we haven't had that issue. Alternatively, you might look at breaking down the application into sub-components, similar to how I've shown you with connection groups, to make it more manageable in your state in terms of size.
Thank you.
You mentioned Java. How do you handle URLs in a specific Java version, since that's not an EXE?
So the story there is really a truly... going to be based on shortcuts. So there's nothing we can do to dynamically check for URLs you're visiting and pull in versions of Java. It's more a case of if we've got a particular shortcut for an application or an IE shortcut even, we can provision that IE shortcut for that user so when they launch it, it launches with a particular version of Java.
So regarding connection groups, in your example, you had the user had access to virtual DJ and DJ skins.
Yep.
And the group was a global presentation.
Yes.
If we were to go solely with user provisioning,
yes.
Do they just need access to the connection group, or do they need access to all three components?
So the user would need access to the connection group and the applications in that connection group. And if they're published to the user, then the connection group should also be published to the user. And if they're published globally, the connection group should also be a global connection group. Question?
Supported through SCCM delivery versus full infrastructure? I've heard that it is.
So a good question there about active upgrade. For those who are working with 4.6, active upgrade was a feature of RTSP, which basically allowed you to update the application upon double click of the icon. We actually don't have that in AppV5 at all in any shape or form. So we're using SMB and HTTP. RTSP is gone. which means so is active upgrade. Upgrades now only happen at either publish time, which can be triggered either by a refresh with the AppV server or via a policy update with the configuration manager server.
So the delta change works, like, you know how when you do an upgrade, it only downloads a delta or whatever?
Yeah, so the delta change is still in place, and that works with config manager as long as 100% in cache. But the upgrade upon launch of the application, that is a feature that's not in AppV 5.0. Question?
When you deploy to connection groups, SCCM 2012,
yes.
You can only do this machine-based?
You can do it, it depends if you target it at a machine or a user, but you can target that either or. So you can either do it a user or a computer. Yes. Cool, so I'm still around if you need further questions afterwards. Everything I talked about and more is available on my blog at www.virtualvibes.co.uk, so feel free to head over there and check it out. There's a ton more, well, not a ton more, but there still is, even so far into TechEd, there's still some AppV content out there for you to consume. These two sessions are coming up next, so feel free to choose one and go ahead and visit that session. As always, we've got resources out there for you, and again, you've probably heard this a million times, but please do go take the time to evaluate the session. It means a lot to me as a presenter and a lot to the conference organizers in terms of the value of that feedback. Thank you very much, and I'll catch you around.